Welcome back to Listen to Your Heart. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Jerry's Heart.
Today's topic, Repatha, Evolokimab. Heart, why'd you pick this one?
Well, Jerry, for people who have had a heart attack, like us, diet and exercise might not be enough to lower the risk of another one.
Okay.
To help know if we're at risk, we should be getting our LDL-C, our bad cholesterol, checked, and talking to our doctor.
I'm listening.
And if it's still too high, Repatha can be added to a statin to lower our LDL-C and our heart attack risk.
Guess it's time to ask about Repatha.
Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Serious allergic reactions can occur. Get medical help right away if you have trouble breathing or swallowing, swelling of the face, lips, tongue, throat, or arms. Common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar, and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site.
Listen to your heart.
Ask your doctor about Repatha. Learn more at Repatha.com or call 1-844-REPATHA.
My name is Lily, and I've had hidradenitis suppurativa, HS, for years. I finally found some relief since taking Cosentyx. Relief means I can show up more.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe hidradenitis suppurativa, HS. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or Cosentyx.com.
Ask your dermatologist about Cosentyx.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
So Richard Boy Barrett, People Before Profit TD, is still with me and we are going to be placing his favourite read up on the Hard Shoulder bookshelf. It's a tough one, Richard. It's always tough for people to pick a single book.
It's
amongst all the books in the world.
It's absolutely impossible. And as I was saying to you earlier, if it was a different week, it could be a different book.
Okay.
And there's a lot of contenders because I love reading and I have a lot of favourite books.
So what book is it this week?
It's 1984. And the reason George Orwell's book 1984, written in 1948, the 84 is 48 turned upside down, but it's prophetic, I think. Book.
Yeah.
And it to my mind, the situation we're now facing with sort of confrontation between the big power blocks in the world, talk about increased military expenditure, growth of authoritarianism. The situation has walked right out of the pages of George Orwell's 1984 and shows how prescient he was about kind of understanding where things were heading in the post-war period. But it's a brilliant book at every level, but it really is prophetic. And, you know, particularly what I think is very relevant right now is the way he says that these big military political blocks will inculcate a sense of fear constantly in the population to keep people down, the proles, as he calls them, the proletariat, keep them down and constantly make the idea that they're facing a possible war, invasion, whipping up fears in order to keep people in their place, in order to control them. And then a big brother watching them all the time, constant manipulation of people, the rewriting of history to sort of suit rulers. Really, you couldn't better describe the current situation, to my mind, where there's whipping up a fear about invasions and the Russians and Trump and, you know, Gaza.
Can you remember what age you were when you first read it or where you first read it?
I was in my teens. I was in teens and I was blown away. I read Animal Farm at the time and then quickly on to 1984. I mean, it's brilliant and it's a bit depressing and I think it was written in the context of the Holocaust, just after the Holocaust. George Orwell was a socialist, a lifelong socialist. He fought in the Spanish Revolution of 1936, wrote a brilliant book about that.
Yeah, a lot of people sometimes kind of have perceived it or would perceive maybe it as a criticism of social, it's a criticism of, as you say, totalitarianism, of Stalinism. But he wrote other, The Lion and the Unicorn, was that his kind of his study on English socialism that George Orwell wrote? So he was a socialist.
Oh, he was absolutely a socialist. And I mean, the fact that he actually went out and fought in the Spanish Revolution 1936 and wrote a book about it, Homage to Catalonia, which describes a genuine revolution. I mean, I think his disillusionment with Stalinism was entirely justified because...
And it was born there, wasn't it, in Spain? He saw kind of how those Stalinist-aligned elements of the kind of Republicans...
Yeah, well, I think he...
...were as obsessed with cracking down on their own side as they were with...
Well, I think he rightly identified that there had been a counter-revolution. I think he believed, as I do, that there was a genuine revolution in Russia and elsewhere in Europe that was progressive, and he was part of that movement, but that there was a counter-revolution and that the regime that emerged had nothing to do with the socialist ideals that he believed in and fought for. But I don't think 1984's critique is limited just to the Stalinist bloc. I think it is very much, in fact, Oceania, where Winston Smith lives and where the drama happens, is the Western world. It's Britain, America, Western Europe. And he's saying the entire world are locked into these blocs, imperialist blocs, to cut a long story short, who are locked into constant conflict with each other, and that the losers are the ordinary people who are basically have fear inculcated in their heads by cynical governments who really want to exploit them and to suppress domestic, if you like, political opposition, but by whipping up fear of invasion by others.
And do you think we're on the precipice of another era of that? You know, because we've talked about it on this show, Donald Trump's vision of the world as being one of spheres of influence. Well, and you know, he keeps talking about this beautiful big ocean between the US and Europe, because he genuinely imagines his sphere of influence being the Americas.
Oh, well, absolutely. I mean, you see,
China can have the other side of the Pacific, like Russia, Europe, they can duke it out for somewhere in the middle.
Look, being a socialist, I often use the word imperialism. And a lot of people will sort of throw their eyes up to heaven and say, that's lefty ideological claptrap. But what else can you describe Trump's agenda at the moment of controlling spheres of influence, of using bullying tactics, military and economic power to control spheres of influence? Putin is doing exactly the same. And I want to add, so are Europe. And in fact, the interesting thing is that they are all willing to support Israel and arm it to crush the Palestinians because they have a common interest in having influence in the Middle East, a strategically important area. So they're all at, and to, like, it's a tale of two Donalds at the moment. There's Donald Trump with his Project Fear, and then we have Donald Tusk saying we need a new arms race, actively promoting an arms race and saying, you know, fear of Russia, concern about Trump should justify increased military expenditure. So this is exactly the point that Orwell is making, that this is very, very convenient for rulers who, you know, benefit from the status quo or the interests that are linked to the military-industrial complex, but the ordinary people lose, and it pushes you in the direction of authoritarianism. And you look what's happening in Germany, for example. Vicious repression of pro-Palestinian protests by the German government, right? So it's not just Trump. This drive towards authoritarianism is happening in Russia. We have it in China. We have it in the United States. And sadly, we're increasingly seeing a drive towards that in parts of Europe.
And back to the books, would you have been a fan then of similar types of both those dystopian imaginations of the future? Yevgeny Zamyatin wrote We and Aldous Huxley's Brave New World. Would you have read all of them as well?
I read Brave New World. I didn't read that other one you mentioned. But I like those.
Similar thing. Life is going to be awful. Yeah. Basically.
No, absolutely. And like, I'm into science fiction and fantasy as well, because often they're good vehicles for kind of looking at the big picture and kind of trying to understand the big forces that are at work in the world, or looking at, you know, where we're heading as a society. But I think, you know, 1984, actually, the philosophy behind it is very different from A Brave New World, which I think is very much about eulogizing the individual as against some sort of social vision for society. But they're both interesting books, you know, and Brave New World, and it's well worth a read as well.
So I suspected actually you were going to pick Ulysses.
Well, it was a second choice, and You know, another common theme is epics, you know, and epics that are, in this case, the epic of everyday life of a character, Leopold Bloom, but is also...
Well, it's quite literally an epic. It's the retelling of the Odyssey.
It's the retelling of the Odyssey. And but what's brilliant is it's saying, you know, that the epic story is not about the kings and the princes and the warriors, but it's about the everyday life of a very ordinary person. In fact, a persecuted minority, in this case, a Jewish character, at a time, something that's not commented enough, when Jewish people were subject to considerable anti-Semitism at the hands of some of the nationalist leaders in this country. And Arthur Griffith is very clearly alluded to in the book as somebody who had supported the pogroms against Jewish people in Limerick in 1904, the year Ulysses is set. And I think really Joyce was also a left winger, very much knew that Irish independence and the revolution was happening. He was writing the book as it was happening, but he was very, very concerned that if the politics of that revolution were dominated by conservative Catholicism or a very narrow form of nationalism, that it wouldn't really give liberation to the oppressed, to women, to working class people. And the book is very much an exploration of that through this one day, this story of one individual kind of traversing the streets of Dublin over 24 hours.
What other books then would have been close run things to get up on the bookshelf?
Well, I mentioned Lord of the Rings.
And so you're a Lord of the Rings fan?
A massive Lord of the Rings fan. Massive, yeah. I mean, I've read
it nerd.
Multiple times. It's brilliant. And like Tolkien actually set up the course that I studied in English literature in UCD. He was fascinated by kind of old English and kind of ancient languages. And that's really where the stories sprang from. And he politically, he'd be the opposite of me, do you know, in that he was quite a reactionary guy. But I think what the books really were, they were written in the trenches of the First World War.
Yeah.
And they were a response to the horrors of the First World War and what he saw as the development of industrial capitalism destroying the environment and putting money and gold and, you know, ahead of like, you know, communal life and nature. And it's brilliant. Like, I would call it a sort of romantic anti-capitalism is what it is, but a brilliant adventure and story of all these different races of elves and hobbits coming together and uniting against the dark forces of Sauron. I also think there's an interesting link to some recent events here is the Palantir. You know the Palantir in the orbs that are the all-seeing eye of the Dark Lord Sauron that are used to manipulate and control the people who hold them. And of course, that company has been very much in the news recently.
Palantir. I never put two and two together. Yeah, I didn't realise where they got their name
Peter
from.
Peter Thiel's company, who provide basically surveillance for Israel and the US military to assassinate people. And he's also a big supporter of Trump, and they've been in the news a lot. So there's a lot of interesting, even now, kind of relevance to Lord of the Rings.
Tolkien is fascinating as well because apparently he lamented the destruction of a folkloric history in England, that the kind of the Anglo-Saxon folklore took over from what was maybe a Britonic history that existed in the past, and he kind of took it upon himself to almost create it to imagine one himself.
Yeah, he created an alternative universe, but looking back and romanticising a sort of, an ancient past based on the kind of mythologies of not just Britain, but also Scandinavia and, the Nordic languages and all that kind of stuff.
He was a small C conservative, though, wasn't he?
Well, kind of big-time conservative.
The tingling of the blacksmith's hammer. Type England.
He was a big time conservative. He was a big time conservative, but like if you look at Peter Jackson's cinematic kind of adaptation,
Do you like them?
I think they're brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And he, even though Tolkien is a bit of a conservative and a reactionary, he also, I think, Jackson recognises the radical kind of content of Lord of the Rings. The fact because a big theme in his dramatization of it or adaptation of it is people of different races that were divided on kind of, you know, like almost racist grounds coming together against the forces that are driven by money and power and greed. So there's a kind of positive message coming out there about people uniting in their common interests. So I think even if writers are sometimes themselves conservative or reactionary, you shouldn't necessarily judge their writing on that.
Yeah.
Because often very conservative writers can still be brilliant writers that really capture a sense of the world.
You can enjoy The Lion and the Witch and the Wardrobe without wanting to invade Jerusalem, in other words, on behalf of Christendom.
Yeah.
What are you reading at the moment?
I'm reading a book called One State by Gada Carmi, who's a Palestinian writer. She writes political books, but she also writes novels. She's a new novel coming out. She was telling me she's coming over here to speak, by the way, if I can plug. Couple of weeks at the Marxism Festival that's happening the weekend after next, a big left-wing festival. And she's coming to speak about her writings. But this particular book, One State, she's a Palestinian. It's written basically to say why the two-state solution is not a solution to the Palestinian the conflict and the violence that we're seeing there, and that what's necessary is a single state of Palestine where everybody is equal. That the two-state solution is only perpetuating the Zionist apartheid system and keeping people at each other's throats and dividing people along religious lines. And that what actually is needed is a single state where everybody, whether they're Christian, Muslim, Jewish or of no religion, should simply be equals in the historic land of Palestine and undercut that the racism and apartheid that is the root of the conflict, the root of the conflict in Palestine. That's her case, and it's one I very much agree with.
Gada Carmi is the author. It's called One State. She's here for that Marxist Festival in a couple of weeks. But 1984 by George Orwell, going up on the Hard Shoulder bookshelf. You told me in the ad break you haven't read Julia. Is it by Sarah Newman, which is the same story but from Julia's point of view? So I recommend it.
I'll definitely give that a look.
Worth a twirl. Yeah. Richard, listen, thanks a million.
Thanks,
Richard Boyd Barrett, People for Profit TD.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.
My name is Lily, and I've had hidradenitis suppurativa, HS, for years. I finally found some relief since taking Cosentyx. Relief means I can show up more.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe hidradenitis suppurativa, HS. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or Cosentyx.com.
Ask your dermatologist about Cosentyx.